This audio clip explores how wisdom rhetoric may create a context in which it invites prophetic rhetoric into it. In other words, in this instance, wisdom rhetoric lies at the baseline of the discourse, and prophetic rhetoric is blended into it. But one can see how, even when the prophetic rhetoric comes into the wisdom rhetoric, basic features of the argumentative texture of wisdom rhetoric continue, and in fact, the narrator returns to wisdom rhetoric at the very end. The section of text that is being explored for this clip is the Epistle of James in the New Testament, beginning chapter 3, verse 13, through chapter 4, verse 10. One notices in chapter 3, verse 13, how the text begins in a standard manner of wisdom rhetoric. It begins by asking a question. Who is wise and understanding among you? And incidentally, I'm going to use the New Revised Standard Version for the basic translation of the text here. Who is wise and understanding among you? So the topic of wisdom and understanding itself is signaled in the question as it begins. Then there is an answer that introduces a thesis. And it's noticeable that this thesis is an exhortative thesis. This is not simply a philosophical thesis, but a thesis characteristic of wisdom rhetoric that begins already with an encouragement to do what the thesis is going to talk about. So the answer to the question in verse 13 is, show by your good life that your works are done with gentleness, born of wisdom. Once the narration has introduced a thesis, verse 14 then presents an argument from opposites or the contraries to clarify the thesis. Namely, if you have bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not be boastful and false to the truth. One notices that verse 14 actually begins with the adversative word but, and then contains the word not in the second clause. This helps to signal that this is an adversative, contrary, opposite argument. If you have bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not be boastful and false to the truth. And now comes a rationale. Such wisdom does not come down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, devilish. This rationale in verse 15 is explanatory. It explains the nature of wisdom by means of a contrary. There is wisdom from above, and there is wisdom that is earthly. The contraries can be listed and extended with unspiritual, devilish, so that we get earthly, unspiritual, devilish, over against heavenly, spiritual, godly. So this contrary relationship establishes an environment for opposites. An opposite is the direct negation of something, so that an excellent example of an opposite is spiritual, unspiritual. But in this context, one can have a series of contraries in the context of the opposites. In other words, it is not only earthly, unspiritual, devilish. We begin to see it is also filled with envy, selfish ambition. One could go on with greed, hatred, etc. Whenever one can add additional items like this, one is dealing with contraries. Once a person gets a particular contrary, like hatred, one may automatically in the mind, or it may be specifically stated, that there is an opposite to this, namely love, hatred. So opposites and contraries work together to intensify and build up modes of thinking that stand over against one another. And we see a list of contraries emerging in verse 15 with earthly, unspiritual, devilish. Verse 16 is an additional rationale. This is a rationale that speaks directly about items in verse 14. Namely, it explains why one should not be boastful and false to the truth if there is bitter envy and selfish ambition in your heart. Verse 16 explains, "For where there is envy and selfish ambition, there will also be disorder and wickedness of every kind." In other words, envy and selfish ambition will produce disorder and wickedness. Verse 17 then clarifies through an adversative that now speaks about the wisdom from above that was mentioned in verse 15. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without a trace of partiality or hypocrisy. Here we see the list of contraries that emerges over against the list that automatically flows out of the wisdom that is earthly, unspiritual, and devilish. We notice that the first item in verse 17, purity, gives us a touch of priestly rhetorics here. This is characteristic of wisdom rhetorics, going all the way back to King Solomon, who asked for wisdom from above concerning how to build the temple. So already, priestly rhetorics blends with wisdom rhetorics at its very beginning points in Solomon, and then one notices also very strong priestly rhetorics in the apocryphal book of Sirach, and then also it is present at various places in the Wisdom of Solomon in the Apocrypha. So the first item on the list in verse 17 is purity. It is wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits. We notice now that after talking about purity, it talks about relationships. Wisdom from above creates peace among people, gentleness among people, willingness to yield among people. It is full of mercy toward others and good fruits that will feed good relationships and good community without a trace of partiality or hypocrisy. And now verse 18 is an excellent conclusion to this little section of wisdom here, as it talks about a harvest of righteousness, as it is translated here. The word in the Greek is actually karpos. It is a fruit of righteousness. Here we see the vegetation and growth and productivity of wisdom rhetorilect that is so internal to it. A fruit of righteousness is sown in peace for those who make peace, or it is sown in peace by those who make peace. Without going into this in greater detail, the fruit of this righteousness is something that grows through peace and creates peace. This wisdom discourse then begins with the question, who is wise and understanding among you, in chapter 3, verse 13 of James, and reaches a conclusion that those who are wise and understanding are those who produce a fruit of righteousness that creates peace in the context of peace. At this point, we move to chapter 4, verse 1, which talks immediately about conflicts and disputes, the opposite of peace. But let us notice that this discussion of conflicts and disputes maintains the argumentative strategies of wisdom rhetorilect, namely questions, answers, we will see rationales, and even recitation of authoritative testimony to support it. All of these are basic strategies of wisdom argumentation, but the mode of prophetic rhetorilect is blended into this wisdom rhetorilect dynamically and dramatically. Notice that verse 1 of chapter 4 is already formulated in a form that is confrontative and oppositional. Those conflicts and disputes among you, where do they come from? If a person simply leaves out the you here, a person could formulate this as a question that is characteristic of wisdom rhetorilect, namely, where do conflicts and disputes come from? Instead, he makes it confrontative. Those conflicts and disputes among you, where do they come from? As he continues with the second question in verse 1, the same thing applies. He says, do they not come from your cravings that are at war within you? Again, it is accusing them of having these cravings within them. The narrator simply could have said, do they not come from cravings that are at war within a person? In other words, verse 1 could have explored the topic of conflicts and disputes and answered the question that they come from cravings within a person in the mode of wisdom rhetorilect that simply explored the topic as a topic of internal cravings that produce conflicts and disputes. But instead, it uses these topics to accuse the people, to confront them, of actually having these cravings that produce the conflicts and disputes. Thus, the interrogative mode here, so characteristic of wisdom rhetorilect, is being blended with prophetic rhetorilect. And this blending comes into verse 2. Verse 2, again, could proceed simply in a wisdom rhetorilect manner by saying that a person who has cravings wants something and does not have it, so they commit murder. They covet something and can't obtain it, so they engage in disputes and conflicts. But notice how the mode of prophetic rhetorelect energizes the wisdom rhetorelect in such a manner that it becomes a confrontational, oppositional mode of speaking. You want something and do not have it, so you commit murder. And you covet something and cannot obtain it, so you engage in disputes and conflicts. You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive, it goes on in verse 3, because you ask wrongly in order to spend what you get on your pleasures. So here in verses 3 and 4, a person sees rationales. They do not receive what they ask for because they are not properly asking. Now in verse 4, we see the prophetic rhetorelect mode par excellence with name calling. Adulterers, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Again, this could have been put simply in the mode of wisdom rhetorelect. Verse 4 could have left out the name-calling adulterers and simply have explained that friendship with the world is enmity with God. Verse 4 then could be a question that simply says, do you know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world becomes an enemy of God. Simply explanatory. But it has this accusing tone that continues in verse 5. Or do you suppose that it is for nothing that the scripture says? Notice again the accusing mode. This could have been stated simply in the mode of wisdom rhetorelect, namely, have you ever read that Scripture says? Or simply, it could have said, Scripture says, God yearns jealously for the Spirit that He has made to dwell in us, but He gives all the more grace. Therefore, it says, God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. This is recitation of authoritative testimony and very characteristic of wisdom rhetorelect. But here, the innuendo, the accusational tone makes it confrontational, oppositional. The narrator is writing here in the mode of a prophet who is sent with a task to perform, to confront and accuse people. Verse 7 continues in a mode that could be wisdom rhetorelect, that is encouraging people now to act in a proper way. Submit yourselves therefore to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Verse 8 begins in a mode that also looks like wisdom rhetorelect. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. But now the next statements become the confrontational, oppositional mode of prophetic rhetorelect when he says, cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Again, we see name-calling in the context of direct confrontation. So here, again, even though strategies of wisdom rhetorelect are being pursued, now the prophetic mode of confrontation is being blended into these strategies in a very biting and dramatic way. This continues in verse 9 with lament and mourn and weep, the kinds of statements that are very characteristic of a prophet who is pronouncing the doom on them. Let your laughter be turned into mourning and your joy into dejection. But then verse 10 ends with an exhorting conclusion that is very characteristic of wisdom rhetorical. Humble yourselves before the Lord, and he will exalt you. This could hardly be any more characteristic of wisdom rhetorical than this statement. One finds it in many places in other passages in the New Testament, and even outside the New Testament in the Mediterranean world. It is commonly observed that if a person humbles themselves, they may be exalted. Thus we see overall from chapter 3, verse 13 in James, how wisdom rhetorical flows down through verse 18. Then beginning in chapter 4, though strategies of wisdom rhetorical continue to be pursued all the way through verse 10, and in fact the discourse ends in a very straightforward exhortative conclusion in verse 10, humble yourselves before the Lord and he will exalt you. Even though it ends that way, throughout the verses of chapter 4, verses 1 through 9, there is very dramatic, confronting, and oppositional prophetic rhetorical blended into it. Thank you.